So greetings from Whadjuk Noongar country, and I acknowledge traditional owners past, present and emerging. Yeah, I was furious on Friday because they released a report, a large scientific report, more than 800 pages. And that scientific report had been very carefully prepared by dozens of the state's top scientists. And what that report said was that there's sort of two important findings that they were writing about this this ancient rock art site called Murujuga. I guess I'll just start by introducing Murujuga because some of your listeners will know it well, but some may not. It's one of the largest rock art sites. I mean, Australia has an incredible number of rock art sites, but this one is really special because it has over a million images in quite a small area, just on a little peninsula with some beautiful islands. It's really beautiful country, red rocky country with a turquoise sea all around this peninsula and then islands going off into the distance. And the rock art is all over these, both that peninsula and the island. And archaeologists have shown that that rock art is really old as well because it's not painted, but it's engraved. So people have chipped the images into the rock. And some of those images go back 50,000 years, so literally to the very first Aboriginal Australians in that area. You know, it's the time of first settlement, and you know, they show law, tradition, belief, rituals, you know, going right the way back, you know, to the early times. So it's an incredible place. Of course, there's extinct animals in there because it's so old. It's the very oldest that we know at the moment depictions of the human face anywhere in the world. It's really special. And Aboriginal folk will know how special a place like that is, and you know, just all of the knowledge and responsibility that goes with a place like that. This one really is. This is one of the great places, and that's why Western Australia and Australia was putting it forward as the next World Heritage Site. What got me really angry when this report came out was that the scientists had made two really important discoveries. First, that they took, there's a few different types of rock that are found in that place, but they took all the different types, you know, just little pieces, and they put them in a climate chamber. And, you know, what they did is that area now, due to government approvals, has got a large industrial precinct right in the middle of it, producing gas, liquefied natural gas and fertilizer and a few other things, right in the middle of all this amazing rock art and heritage. And the report was showing that the pollutants coming out of that industry, when you simulate it in scientific environment, you can see that the rock starts to erode, it starts to actually degrade, that those industrial pollutions can damage the rock. In the lab, they were showing in principle that we've got a potential problem, and that was a really important finding of their study. They then went out on site and did a whole bunch of tests on site, looking at the actual rock art and the rocks. And one of the things they found was that in the area around industry, so the industry is right in the middle of the site, unfortunately, but on the rocks all around it, the rocks didn't look proper. It wasn't the sort of the normal look that you have of those rocks when you look at them carefully under a microscope. Those rocks are normally beautifully smooth. They're this red kind of, it's a sandy texture, very hard, you know, very strong surface. But in the area around industry, when they looked at it under a microscope, it was kind of like a honeycomb or Swiss cheese. It was full of holes, these tiny little holes.
Porous,
exactly. So the exact scientific word they use is it's got elevated porosity. Mm. Now, I know what that means, and also they, you know, their own experiments in the weather chamber show what had happened is that the this pollution has removed one of the elements that make up that surface. It's actually the element manganese, which is those rocks are kind of browny red.
Yep.
And they're browny red because they've got manganese in, which is black, and they've got iron in, which is red. And you don't want to remove either of those things because the manganese and the iron is what makes that rock hard. If you lose any of them, you're going to lose that whole surface of the rock. And unfortunately, the pollution is removing the manganese. And so it's creating all these little holes where the manganese used to be. And part of that rock has also got clay, you know, just normal white clay in it. That's kind of underneath the manganese and iron. And once the pollution can get through those holes into the clay, clay's soft. You know, the iron and the manganese is what's protecting the rock and the rock art. Once you've penetrated that and you've gone down to that little clay level between the rock and the surface, that stuff just washes out with these pollutants. And then the whole surface is gone. So that you just end up with these perfectly clean rocks and all of the rock art gone, because the rock art all sits in that surface layer. So I was so angry because this scientific report had made these incredibly important findings that tell us that, my God, we've got to wake up and we've got to do something about this. And they tried to hide it by saying that in the government spin that went alongside it, that they've now admitted was written by the government and not the scientists. They said that there was no evidence, or that the pollution levels in the area were below what's required to damage the rock art. And it's simply not true. That's not what it says in the report. That's what made me furious, someone tampering with scientific findings
I mean,
in order to, look after industry.
which is extraordinary, because what we're really saying is government is completely untrustworthy, and it's not governing for all, it's only governing for a multinational company that doesn't even pay tax.
Yeah, well, you said that, not me, but I got a spray from Roger Cook for moving into statements like that. But I can say that it's really alarming that very significant scientific findings were tampered with, and that the public wasn't told the truth.
Now, your actual area of expertise is the rock art itself, and so I
Yeah, it
presume
is,
that in
yeah.
a sense you are a conduit between the original peoples whose ancestors have actually divulged themselves in this art and all of us interlopers, effectively.
Well, I mean, there's still people that speak for that rock art. I don't speak for it. I'm
no.
just there to help them look after it.
Yeah, no, that's and so this is the reason why I'm talking to you as well, because I have actually spoken to the people who are the people who it's their job to actually care for all of this stuff. And it's so offensive to think that they're being sidelined in this manner, that just things are being told to them. But you are an expert in terms of the art itself for us. And this is mind-blowing work, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it's such an important piece of heritage. I mean, there is so much rock art in Australia that we almost get blasé about just how important it is. You know, anywhere else in the world, people would be just, look at the richness of this heritage. You can go, you know, thinking of Queensland itself, you know, the Cape York Peninsula covered in some of the most important rock art. This stuff is all over the place, but Murujuga is special just because there's so much and it's so old. You know, the paintings don't survive quite so long. It's these carvings that really do survive a very long time. And it's, age is not everything, of course, but what you've got is that astonishing continuity from the very beginning, right through, you know, to the times of the massacres in recent times when the rock art, came to an end.
Well, the fact that it's important locally is also married to the fact that it's important historically for humankind, isn't that
Of
so?
course, of course. Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure if you would have caught, but so Australia's putting this forward as a World Heritage Site. I'm sure your listeners know, sort of that then takes it to the one of the 1,000 most important places in the world. And the scientists have spent a long time working with Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation to produce a really brilliant nomination dossier. That went in, and ICOMOS, which is the body that the scientific advisory body that advises UNESCO on whether a World Heritage nomination should be approved or not, came back with its tentative recommendations this week, its draft recommendations this week. And unfortunately, they are the draft recommendations are really quite strong. I don't know, unfortunately or fortunately, but what they have said is that this place, they have no question whatsoever about the importance of this place. They commend the Aboriginal Corporation for leading the process. They commend the beautiful way that the nomination is written. They commend the incredible importance of that site. But they say they basically, the recommendation is to refer it back to Australia. And just to sort of put it in layman's terms, and I can use their words if you want, but to put it in layman's terms, what they've said, we're kind of like the naughty kid in class. We've been told you've been behaving badly. Go out of the room, get your act together, and you can come back in when you've learned to behave better. Because what they've done is they've said that until they're going to, the recommendation is not to list it as a World Heritage Site until one, the Australian government stops building industry all over it. Currently, there is a new industrial plant, a fertiliser factory being
the
built.
Fertiliser right plant? That yeah. just really floors me.
It's unbelievable. It doesn't have to be there. It could be anywhere at all. But like a whole square kilometre of that beautiful site has been bulldozed to make way for a fertiliser plant.
Amazing.
Which could have been built, you know, on empty land somewhere else,
yeah.
Created jobs and opportunities, and instead they've shoved it there. I'm not surprised that this recommendation has come back, stop building industry all over it. The second one, get your pollution in order, get it down to zero. And the third one, which seems to have really outraged the minister, but it's a really nice, it's a really good suggestion. So they said you need to come up with a decommissioning plan that, you know, that rock art's been there 50,000 years. Aboriginal people have been there 50,000 years. That industry's only been there for 20 or 30, and you've got to think about how you're going to clean it up and restore that place to how it was before. So you've got to actually think Aboriginal terms in terms of time, not in the Western mindset that just sees the day after tomorrow and the next paycheck. But you've got to have a decommissioning plan. The minister seems to be outraged that he should be thinking about a decommissioning plan. But of course you've got to. We've got to clean that landscape up. We've got to try and sort out the mess that all that industry created and turn it back to the beautiful cultural place that it was. I mean, this is world's best practice, you know, but it should be normal practice here in Australia. Why is this an outrage to us and not like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea.
But you know, it's fascinating because this particular issue and the federal government allowing another 50 years or so of gas exploitation in the area is a absolute turning point in, or parallel universes are being presented to each other.
Is. Yeah, I mean, this. Let's see how this develops, you know. This is where we make the choice, you know. Are we going to look after this country and look after the incredibly rich heritage that it has, or are we going to allow industry, you know, to rip out the natural resources without actually paying a lot back? You know, that we could have both if it was properly regulated and properly governed. We could have both. And I mean, that's a message I've been trying to say in the media, is that even it's going to be difficult just to remove that industry now. It's there, and I don't think anyone is going to be willing to move it. But even without moving it, definitely we shouldn't be allowing anything new to go there. That should be the starting point. We should write it into law that nothing new goes there. And secondly, we should say that those plants that are already operating, they must operate with zero pollution. And that sounds a big ask, but it's not. They could do it. You could literally electrify. So they're currently, all of those plants there are burning gas as their fuel source, their power source. So they create power by burning gas. They don't have to. They could use electricity, and they could use renewable electricity. So Western Australia has a massive oversupply of solar power during the daytime from all of our solar panels on our roofs. That could be powering all this industry during the daytime, and you wouldn't need to be burning gas. If you're using electricity, there's no pollution. And so the environment and the heritage would not be damaged if they were using electricity as the power source. Now, they're not going to do that because it would cost them money to transfer it over. I mean, we could either, as society, we could guilt them into doing it, or the government could actually develop some balls and do something about it and force them to do it.
It's interesting because it's about, as someone always says to me, who's we? You know, it's who's we, white man?
Who's they? Me and you. Me and you. I think it's going to have to be us. It's going to have to be both of us working together. My sister.
Thanks very much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much. It's good to talk to you.
Bye.
Cheers.